Welcome to Monday Pulse. I'm joined by Ali, Izzy and Rebecca.
As always, hello everybody. Welcome to the Monday Pulse. It is a festive episode in that it is December now, but we still have a load of stories. Do we have a Christmassy story?
We have kind a vaguely of. Christmassy story at the end. Unfortunately, Santa isn't coming with all his cheers or whatever the phrase is, because the Christmas story we're talking about later relates to the oncoming strikes.
Santa's too busy with the cost of living crisis, unfortunately.
That is unfortunate.
So stay tuned for that cheery piece of information. But in the meantime, we have great stories for you.
But the thing is, this story might actually be cheery for some people. The story is from The Observer that Keir Starmer is warned by Labour peers not to waste political capital on Lords reform.
And since we found the research for this story, I'd quite like to add that he has pledged to double down on this, essentially.
Yeah, so essentially, this was all sort of... This has been discussed sort of all up in the skies, about what Keir Starmer was exactly going to do. However, it all sort of evolved around this paper that Gordon Brown has been working on for the past 2 years called A New Britain, and it got released this morning, Monday, 10 a.m. I ran out of my lecture to look at the live updates because I'm sad.
Did you actually?
I did.
You live a fulfilling life.
Scarlet.
I know. So I was on my way to Horwood Library, right? And I thought, what can I do on the walk over here before I have to prepare for my EU law tutorial? I can look at what Gordon Brown thinks about whether we should abolish the House of Lords. And he says that we should.
Are you saying that even with his texture like sun, he is not thinking that sunlit uplands are ahead for the House of Lords?
No, he wants to get rid of the House of Lords in its unelected form. He wants an elected second chamber. What do we all think of this? As a bit, there were up to 40 recommendations, but this is the big one that's making the headlines because Keir Starmer, in a speech afterwards, endorsed this proposal to happen within 5 years of a Labour government. Therefore, in its first term, there was some suggestion that this should be neglected to the second term after, as some of his critics put forward, he has dealt with the domestic issues I'm sure we will have as a result of the current cost of living crisis after the next election. So my question to everyone is, what do we think about an elected House of Lords, or wouldn't even be called a House of Lords, an elected upper chamber?
Wow, where do we start? I mean, I understand the ideological reason for wanting to abolish the House of Lords, obviously.
Do you agree with it? Do you agree with the removal of hereditary peers?
The removal of hereditary peers, yeah, I do, in ideal. My concern with an elected second, I guess you call it a chamber. I don't really know if it kind of applies, but for lack of a better word, an elected...
It will be a chamber because the House of Commons is the lower chamber. House of Lords is the current upper chamber.
Yeah, so a sort of second chamber. It's an awkward one because we run the risk of having the American-style stalemate that they often have. Well, it actually hasn't really transpired too much this way in the American midterms, but so often the second half of a president's term is completely inane because, say, in this current case, you'd have the Democrats, a Democrat president, just have everything blocked.
Yeah, so this will happen for Joe Biden in some sense because the House of Representatives went Republican in the midterms. Mm. So,
but the House of Congress did not.
No, so the Senate. The Senate is their upper chamber. That is still Democrat. However, I think they've actually gained a seat in the Senate. That is dependent on the runoff in Georgia, which will be happening this month, actually.
The point being, it's not that big a disaster for the Democrats as
the
it
point,
could have been.
The point is, the US example is a good one to make. However, their results have been very close in the past 10 years, so they've always had difficulty putting through legislation, but that was more of an issue in George W. Bush's time.
I know that it was a big criticism of the Obama administration as well.
Yes, he couldn't get through any sort
of
gun reform.
Yes, completely hamstrung by the situation.
One of the main arguments for keeping hereditary peers is actually to help democracy. So The House of Commons has MPs who are elected by the people. Hereditary peers and the appointed peers are not democratically elected in any shape or form. They're put, they are recommended by the Prime Minister, or, you know, hereditary, their 10 times great grandfather sat in the House of Lords, therefore their child does, etc., etc. The idea is that because they have no democratic legitimacy at all, they cannot make, because their purpose is as a revising chamber, a bill gets passed in House of Commons that then goes to House of Lords, where it is revised by the appointed peers are often, and they should be, so-called experts in their field, and so they revise this legislation and give their recommendations. However, they cannot enforce their recommendations because they lack that democratic element. That is the main argument for the support of the current state of the House of Lords. So the idea of it depends when they say elected. Does this mean the second chamber is elected by the people? Or, as it seems to be suggested, it will be elected by a sort of appointments committee. That then begs the question of who is it? Is it just going to go all back into the Prime Minister making the decisions, which obviously creates massive issues?
And if I can cut in on that, one of the big sort of overwhelming criticisms of the House of Lords in the last couple of years were prime ministers who left in disgrace, both Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, had quite lengthy resignation appointments into the House of Lords and that sort of thing. So it becomes a question of, are these people sort of, you know, flooding the House of Lords with their own people?
That is the suggestion that was made. It was Cash for Honours was a scandal back in 2009. That the new Labour government had. This has gone
way back.
If anyone remembers Harold Wilson's Lavender List, which was an issue where he just put all his mates into the House of Lords after he resigned. This concept of resignation, honestly, I find really strange.
Yeah,
you're resigning from being Prime Minister, therefore you get to put 50 of your mates to back your interests.
Yeah, it's very... It's sketchy, isn't it? It's not... If we're talking about democracy as a concept, and obviously it's a very sort of abstract concept, and it's quite actually difficult to pin down what democracy actually is, but this doesn't feel like it.
Exactly. So that's why Starmer is arguing for these reforms. He says this will restore voters' faith in politics through, as he said in his speech earlier today, the biggest ever transfer of power from Westminster to the British people. And this is sort of top of the billing. Do you agree with the statement? Do you think that this will, if we have an elected upper chamber in any sort of form of what election means, that this will actually restore your faith back somewhat in British politics?
Well, yeah, I think so. Like Ali was saying earlier, the idea that it's a little bit idealistic in a way. And while the ideal would be to have it be elected, there are problems that arise, but the idea that as the quote in the article says, that the idea that people are best placed to decide what works in Stirling, Sunderland, and Swansea are the people there. The idea that they're elected means that more of what the people will be represented, which is a really, really good thing. So I'd have to see what it looks like when it happens, if it happens.
Yes, I think unfortunately Labour have fallen back into probably my main criticism. Legitimate criticism that people have of the Labour Party, that one I also hold myself, is they put forward these lovely policies that based on principles look great, but they never provide any of the detail, and it makes you quite hard to actually believe that these things are going to happen. So Tony Blair, in his first term, when he was campaigning for his first term in office, also campaigned for an elected upper house. He campaigned for electoral reform, so bringing in proportional representation. He then got a ridiculous majority, and then suddenly all the talks of reform went away, Brown was dealing too much with the financial
crisis.
In terms
of the House of Lords stuff, Blair's government did do some reformation. They significantly cut down the hereditary peers number,
and they introduced the concept of the elected peerage system.
Into the conversation.
Yes, but they could have and they should have, with their majority, done way, way more, because then their through not enacting radical reform, we then led to this issue where particularly Boris Johnson, and whether Liz Truss's resignation or not go through, because she's proportionally, I think she's, I may not be right on the stats, but it's ludicrous enough that these may be right. Something for like every day in her office, she's nominating 3 peers.
I've heard something like that.
Which is ridiculous. Boris Johnson put forward completely unreasonable people into the House of Lords, such as the owner of the Evening Standard, Lebedev, who is a literal Russian oligarch. Additionally, David Cameron wasn't much better. David Cameron and Theresa May had less people, but for instance, you may have read in the news recently about Michelle Monet. I don't quite know how to say her last name, but she's currently in a bit of trouble because, as she should be, because around sort of PPE contracts and sort of bullying and blackmailing her way to gain millions of pounds during a pandemic. She is a member of the House of Lords and has been since David Cameron put her in there. So not that Tony Blair and his team sat there and thought if we enact this level of reform, this will lead to the issues 20 years down the line. But perhaps some of these issues could have been prevented if they enacted more radical reform, such as what has been suggested in Gordon Brown's paper. And an additional sort of, we're not going to go through all the recommendations because there's 40, but another prevalent one that Ali has just pointed out to me is the banning of all second jobs, which obviously was a massive problem and continues to be a massive problem in Boris Johnson's government, Owen Paterson. And almost lobbying.
Could you count Matt Hancock going on I'm a Celeb as a second job? It's a second source of income, put it that way.
It is, because he has been confirmed that he has gained £400,000 as a result of his stint in the jungle, which is absolutely ridiculous, which is my personal opinion. But on the banning of the second jobs, I think this is a really good move in general, because most MPs who have second jobs use it for lobbying purposes, have it on the side when they do their consultancy. There's very, very, very vague language that essentially earns them hundreds of thousands of pounds. The only issue that I am thinking of is, what about MPs that are also doctors, that are also GPs, that are firefighters? Because there are a few examples in the House of Commons. So when it says banning almost all second jobs, I don't know what they're going to choose to include and exclude. And that's sort of part of the Labour narrative of, oh, that's a nice idea, but what about the specifics? Because I'd quite like to know them, because how can you have, like, I quite like the idea of an MP that is also a doctor part-time, because at least they know what the reality of the NHS is like. So I'd like to see some of the details.
There is a slight problem of, will this discourage people? I mean, there have been reports, I know that Rory Stewart has been talking a lot about how becoming an MP has become a relatively worse job over the years. And if you want qualified people to be, representatives, will they bother going for being an MP over their day job? Or is the pull of democracy, whatever that is in its current form, big enough? Is it a large enough drive for people to actually get into politics in the current climate?
Yeah, and I think this is a part of a wider discussion about the standard of MPs. So I think we've all agreed here that perhaps the standard has been lowered in recent years.
It's quite difficult to say, to be honest. But
I think there's always been scandals, but the proportion, like the scale of scandals, is like matched to, I would say, John Major's government. That sort of end of a long period of party rule, where perhaps the application process, because of course they've got more MPs, the Conservative Party, the application process and sort of local Conservative associations isn't as it should be, because there's more of them, therefore they can't, perhaps they actually don't have enough choice anymore. A lot of people Something I found really interesting is a lot of MPs are standing down at the next election, the most high profile being Javid, who's the current health secretary and a former chancellor, one of five, I believe, this year. Is there four or five chancellors this year?
Okay, off the top of my head, Hunt, Kwarteng, Johnson, Sunak.
And Javid. Yeah, so four.
No, but there's somebody else who... Nadeem Zahawi, very briefly as well.
Five. We've had five chancellors this year, everybody, just to remind you. Zahawi, I literally forgot.
I feel like we're missing another one. Can anyone...
I think it's five. I think we're going to finish at five. But also Chloe Smith, who's in Work and Pensions Department... William Bragg, who's quite an influential member in the Tory party on the back benches, they've all said that they are standing down at the next election, which I find quite interesting. Rebecca, do you think this is indicative of this sort of growing sign of a lower standard of MPs, or is this just something that happens at the end of every period of long governance for a particular party?
I mean, I'd say that the sort of politics or the politicians that we've been seeing going through at the moment have obviously been, particularly obviously the with the Conservative government, it's because of the whole, basically who's voting, the very extreme minority of Conservative voters who were voting for the Prime Minister and so on, for the leader of the party and things like that. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's obviously subjective who you think is competent and who you don't think is competent, but I think we're just going through quite a tumultuous period in politics. I think that's fair to say after partly post-pandemic, after many sort of scandals, but also, you know, any period of stability is often followed by periods of instability, and I think we're just in one of those at the moment.
There's quite, yeah, I feel like it is quite an unstable period, although I think we are stabilizing ever so slightly. I do think that Sunak has provided that element of stability. However, he's got a lot of issues to tackle. And after the break,
Can I say something very, sorry?
I will
rush this out. But it is interesting that Sunak's line has been a lot about supporting, restoring trust in politics. And I feel like one of the things that Starmer's done is completely undercut him here. If this, you know, gets enough publicity and enough push out, that people will, you know, tangible ideas for changing and reforming, you know, the Houses of Parliament, Westminster as a whole, might serve to undercut what Sunak's been saying, which might come out as empty
words.
Yes,
because ultimately the Conservative Party will never reform the House of Lords. I feel I can say that quite confidently.
I'd be very surprised, put it that way.
Yes. But yes, there are a lot of issues that Rishi Sunak has to tackle, such as immigration, which we will discuss after a little Christmas-themed song break.